the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is A Walk Through the Mind, a moment where we can sit back, hang out, have a conversation, share some talking points that are bouncing around inside my head, and see if we can't take those talking points and advance a conversation elsewhere, get the conversation started along with other people. And lately, I've been hearing a lot about universal basic income, UBI, something that I've heard a handful of 2020 presidential hopefuls communicate, bring up. And what is it? What's the universal basic income? Universal basic income is just basically that. Everybody gets a lump of cash at some point during the month, 1st to 15th or the final day, whatever the jurisdiction decides. Finland tried this out. They gave a handful of residents $500 a month. One of the presidential candidates, Andrew Yang, says he wants to give citizens $1,000 a month. And that sounds awesome. I like the idea of free money. I like the idea of getting a wad of cash in my pocket. Go spend on whatever I want, whatever I need to spend it on. Cover some bills. Or maybe my bills are covered and I can go buy a bag of M&Ms or something. But this kind of logic really does bother me. It's a fix that we probably do need, but I don't see the implementation of it being as successful as it sounds to me as a peasant, me as someone who is not a mathematician, is not a fiscal wizard, someone who's not truly versed in policies and all the other things, just some person that's got a high school diploma. But back at the beginning of May, Andrew Yang was here just talking about that, specifically the universal basic income. And he brought up Alaska. Alaska has a universal basic income, but it's not that. It's not the same thing. It's a dividend. And again, I'm kind of talking out of myself, not fully versed in this. But Alaska has oil companies drilling for oil, and Alaska said, if you're going to do that, you're going to pay our citizens a chunk of money, part of your income from drilling oil. And Alaskans get a good chunk of money, and it helps out their bills. But the universal basic income is a discussion, a target for everyone in the United States. Now, when Andrew Yang brought this up, he mentioned that a person named Thomas Paine from way back in the day had this idea, this concept, and they wanted to call it the citizen's dividend. Now, the thing with the dividend, I forgot to look up the definition, but a dividend is, you know, we got extra money and you get part of those proceeds. Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but the United States is not running a surplus on cash. We are a little bit in debt. And I look at something like the phrase citizen's dividend as citizen's responsibility. So instead of getting your money, you'd actually have to pay a little bit more than what you're paying in taxes already. But one of my bigger problems with the universal basic income, we can follow one trail being along the lines of supply and demand, something that I've brought up in the $15 an hour episode. Whereas with that much more money printed, you have technically devalued the dollar because there's just that much more in circulation. And if everybody's got $1,000, everybody's got $1,000. That raises the baseline, the bottom level for everybody. So instead of everybody, when you're broke right now, when you're broke, you have $0. There's nothing in your bank account. You probably even owe a bunch of money on top of that. But with a universal basic income, broke turns into $1,000 a month. And that's just, again, a new baseline, a new zero level. Everybody's got $1,000. And again, you know, as of right now, $1,000 would do everybody wonderful. You could pay that car bill. You could pay the electric bill. You could pay the water bill and still have a handful of dollars left over to go buy some milk and cereal. But when we have companies that are contracted with the government, such as here in Seattle, we've got Seattle City Light. And then we've all heard of PG&E down in California, just to name two examples. And I'm very sure there are many more examples. But these are electricity companies, the people that supply you with the power to your house. These are not government entities. These are private businesses with contracts to supply the citizens. And a simple, very generic example I have under my experiences is a couple years ago, Seattle City Light told everybody they need to, all the citizens need to start saving energy, right? We're using too much energy. We're using too much power. Go get energy efficient light bulbs. Go get energy efficient refrigerators and freezers and insulate your homes. Get new windows. And everybody did. We're a pretty green place out here in Seattle. Everybody's like, well, do my part. I'm going to save the environment. And everybody happily saw their energy bills go down. Everybody was saving money. But then Seattle City Light came by and said, well, you guys are doing too good of a job. We're not making enough money to pay people. So they raised their rates. And so everybody who had saved $50, $75, $100 in their energy bill is now back to where they were. They're saving energy. They're not producing as much. They're using as much power. But the bill went down and came right back. And that's kind of one of my bigger fears of with universal basic income, is you will have these mandatory government entities, because when you have a home and you live in a house, that house is not allowed to be without water, without electricity, or without trash pickup. In a nutshell, I'm sure there's variants here and there. But what happens when people see that, well, everybody's got $1,000. Everybody's already got $1,000. What's to stop the companies? And not saying that they're going to outright say, well, I got $1,000. Let's just take more money. Companies are crafty. We know this. And what's to stop these government entities from going, well, everybody's got $1,000. Let's kind of just tick up the rates. Just tick them up. Just, you know, $5 here, $10 there. And now you're just a little bit more poor. Instead of your electric bill being $100 a month, now it's 110. It's 120 extra dollars a year. What could you buy with $120 a year? That's a chunk of change. Now put that across all three of your mandatory housing requirements. What's to stop your landlord, the bank, credit card company, all of that? And where would we get this universal basic income? Wouldn't come off of a tree. It wouldn't, technically it would magically appear in your bank account, but it's something that's given from the government. Now, the thing is, when the government gives you money, it's not the government's money. It's our money. I've paid my taxes. You've paid your taxes. That person over there has paid their taxes. Companies, theoretically, have paid their taxes. The government collects it and they put it all into a big pot, and they got a handful of people over there that have to separate and divvy out the money, make sure everybody gets paid, and then you have to have your support people. So they've got to pay those people to divvy up the cash, make sure it's all taken care of responsibly and no one's paid twice and no one's underpaid. So everybody sends a dollar. The government scrapes 10 cents off and returns 90 cents back, in a nutshell. Now, we have to pay people, yes. We got to pay people to do their job, but it's not an equal return on investment, so to speak. Government adds cost to things. guess I'm going to have to kind of leave that there. I'm not a scholar. I'm just here thinking thoughts, sharing thoughts. Let's go back to the baseline of things. I grew up on food stamps, and growing up on food stamps is not an enjoyable thing. You got to buy the cheapest of cheap canned food, knockoff macaroni and cheese. Grow up and you finally are able to afford that $1.10 box of Kraft. Whereas when you're younger, you had to buy the bargain bin 50-cent box of nastiness. But food stamps are, in a sense, the universal basic income, the bare minimum of what we're supposed to be able to afford. And that's handed out by the government. But that one would differ. That differs from the UBI because you have to qualify for it. You have to qualify for food stamps. You have to have a certain economical situation and apply for it and maintain it. But we've all seen and heard of people abusing that welfare system, buying beer with cash or cigarettes with cash and then turning around, you know, or selling their food stamps to get actual cash so they can go buy other stuff. Food stamps doesn't buy a TV. But that's a priority thing that everybody's got to figure out and work around. But if everybody's getting a UBI, what happens to the food stamp program? Does that disappear or does it become another program? And like I said, that the money comes from taxpayers, comes from you and me, comes from the business down the street. As I brought up in, again, the $15 an hour episode, there's the justification on being able to pay people. What are people's value? What is their time worth? What is it worth to a company? There's been an impact. I wish I had that to share with you. That the information's out there. There's also information supporting $15 an hour. But if there's job cuts, there's hour cuts, there's increases in cost on all sorts of different levels. Robots are cheaper to employ than $15 an hour humans. It means people are out of a job. It means we have less people in the workplace contributing to taxes. Where does the money for $1,000 a month come from? Knock it down to $500 a month. I mean, something. But again, where does the money come from? And then as far as businesses and corporations go, you remember the Panama Papers? That was something where some guy created a document that showed companies with offshore accounts, offshore businesses, places where they were funneling money to avoid paying taxes, companies and people too. How do we collect that money? Because in a roundabout way, as shady as it is, it's kind of a legal thing that they're doing. Somewhere between illegal and illegal. It's what the law says, and as long as you play and color in between the lines, you can get away with it. Because Andrew Yang, his solution, instead of taxing oil, is to tax technology. But people like Apple and Amazon and whoever else have found out a way to keep the money outside of the United States to avoid paying taxes. And under the auspices of the good business practice, not moral, but good, you're supposed to maximize profits. And if you're not paying taxes, that money technically goes into the coffers. It's technically a win. So where do we go? How will all this play out? I don't know. I'm in a job market that I know. I don't believe it's in the next 5 years. I don't believe it's in the next 10 years, but 10 years might be the cutoff. I'm hoping for 20 to 25 years before my industry gets automated. I like the idea of the UBI. I really do. Again, it's $1,000 a month could definitely help pay some bills. It's not going to cover all my bills. It's not going to cover my rent. It'll cover my water and my electricity and a handful of other things. But even at $1,000 a month, it takes more than $12,000 a year to live anywhere close to Seattle. So then I'll have to find another form of work, and hope that it's able to supplement me to get me to the bare minimum that I choose to live at. But even then I worry, because again, what skills am I going to have in the future? The UBI sounds, again, like I said, sounds like a great idea, but I need a better education, as I'm sure we all do. I think we all could use an actual mathematician and a policymaker, a full round table with naysayers and yaysayers. Something to kind of balance it out. I know, again, it's a big conversation that's been happening lately. Pretty sure most of us have heard about it. And we can be hopeful, but let's not rush into things. Because like I said at the beginning, there was the guy, Thomas Paine, who said the citizen's dividend, but we don't have a dividend. We are in an embarrassingly massive amount of debt right now. And if you go to usdebtclock.org, you can see your share and the taxpayer, each individual taxpayer's share of what they owe. If we were to try and zero out the national debt today, right now, per citizen, if we wanted to zero out that debt, everyone would have to pay immediately $67,000, almost $68,000. Debt per taxpayer is almost $182,000 per person, per taxpayer. I don't know about you, but I don't have that kind of money to help zero out the debt. And it's all figured and balanced, and everybody's got the idea going. But it's a slog, it's a process, and we'll get there, we'll figure all this out. But just be warned that it's not as simple as just printing some ones and zeros into everybody's bank account. But we'll find the solution. I'm Billy Bones, BILLYBON, the number 3, S. You find me on Twitter, at Billy Bones. Got a website, billybones.com, all spelt the same. There's a contact page, Discord page. Join the conversation. Tell me what I got wrong. Tell me what I got right. Shoot me an email. Love mail, hate mail, questions, comments. Send it all. Love you guys.